Late Debate on RTE Radio 1.
Dublin declares white smoke at the RDS as Labour edges out radio host Niall Boylan. Newbridge nail biter, third recount in Kildare, in epic showdown for final council seat nationwide. And hollow celebration, why are Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil celebrating their worst ever local election result? We'll have all that and more on tonight's Late Debate. Barry Lenehan here tonight, standing in for Colm O'Mungon, who's taking a well-earned rest. We have a panel here as well. They'll rest for a moment because we're going straight to the RDS and Kay Sheehy Habemus, MEPs. Kay, white smoke there. What's going on?
Yes, white smoke, and two MEPs have exceeded the quota, which is even a bigger surprise. So Barry Andrews of Fianna Fáil got 76,881 votes. Regina Doherty of Fine Gael got 77,442, and Len Boylan of Sinn Féin got 68,235. Éan O'Riordan, who was behind Niall Boylan coming into this count, got a whopping 16,614 votes from the eliminated Ciarán Cough to get him to 63,526, and therefore the returning officer declared the four of them elected.
So those four elected, and just beating off Niall Boylan, who'd been in the frame throughout.
Indeed, and the man who topped the poll is just beside me, Barry Andrews.
Yes, Barry Andrews, Fianna Fáil MEP, re-elected. Congratulations. How are you feeling?
I'm just relieved, very proud of the campaign that we ran. It was a very positive campaign. A fantastic team in Fianna Fáil, with my own family, and so grateful to so many people that came out and voted for me last Friday. And I want to also thank the count staff, and not just here in the RDS, but across the country, because of their patience, their professionalism. They carry out this very arduous task that's absolutely central to our democracy. Very grateful for them, for the good humour as well, over the last few days.
And you've topped the poll on this occasion. Your vote is higher than what Fianna Fáil's vote is across the four Dublin local authority areas. So your vote higher than your party's in Dublin. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think we ran a positive pro-EU campaign. We're trying to really get the message out how important the European Union is as an engine of growth to the Irish economy, while also making a case for doing business in a different, more sustainable way, and respecting human rights. And I think people respond to that positive message. I think there's also a value to incumbency as somebody that's been in the European Parliament for the last few years, in terms of being able to...
Did you nick a few votes from Fine Gael by them not having a candidate on the south of the Liffey?
Well, you know, these things go back and forth, and I'm sure Fine Gael got votes from Fianna Fáil the last time, but on this occasion, I've been in the field, and, you know, to top the poll, I know that it's the first time this has happened since the 1980s for a Fianna Fáil candidate in Dublin. So it offers hope for the general election that's only a few months. We don't know exactly when it is, but it gives us some hope that we can be competitive.
And I take it you won't be running in that.
No, I'm absolutely dead. I think it's really important. A lot of people consider the European Parliament to be a second order parliament. I don't believe that at all. I've said it many times, 80% of our laws originate in decisions that are taken in Brussels and Strasbourg, and we need people to commit to the European Parliament, to commit to the work to get the seniority that comes with tenure.
No bother. Well, Barry Andrews, newly elected Fianna Fáil MEP for Dublin, thank you very much for joining us from the RDS. From the banks of the Liffey to the banks of the River Lee, Brian O'Connell, what's the story in Ireland South?
Nicely done, Barry. The results of Count 8, elimination of and distribution of Una McGurk's, just under 7,000 votes, are just getting underway. That count, it's taken little over an hour or thereabouts to get through each of these counts. And we're still, Barry, working our way through candidates here who have about 10,000 votes or under. So it's really, I suppose, until they start eliminating candidates with double that number, that things are going to get interesting and the eliminations will affect the order of candidates as they stand currently. Just to remind you, Sean Kelly surpassed the quota on the first count. He was deemed elected. Billy Kelleher is about 21,000 votes short of a quota. Some distance behind Billy Kelleher is a group of candidates. The order and the size of the gap between them hasn't really changed that much since the first count. So we've Michael McNamara on 57,809. Cynthia Niveruku about 1,000 votes behind him. Mick Wallace is about 1,000 votes behind her. And Kathleen Funchen for Sinn Féin is about 3,500 votes back. And then we have outgoing Green MEP Grace O'Sullivan. She's about 7,000 votes further back. So the order, as I said, and the gap between them hasn't really changed since that first count. Now, bearing in mind this is the Green Party's last chance to retain an MEP in Brussels, one Green Party member I just spoke to a little while ago said they're pretty keen to see what happens when and if Fine Gael's John Mullins is eliminated, but he did admit they're facing a real challenge now to try and retain that seat, which Grace O'Sullivan won in 2019. But so far, I mean, it's been, you've probably seen this yourself, it's been quite hard to determine precisely voting patterns of transfers, just as it was back in 2019. But I think even more so now, candidates, for example, on the right are transferring left and vice versa. Even Sean Kelly transferred more votes to Fianna Fáil than he did to his Fine Gael running mate. So geography, I think, is having a big impact. And with four candidates from the southeast all still in the running here for a seat, I think it's going to be pretty fascinating to see where those transfers go, regardless of perceived political leanings and biases. At this stage, Barry, it could be well into tomorrow afternoon before Billy Kelleher reaches that quota and takes the second seat. We've been told to keep Thursday free. I presume they mean Thursday this week.
And in a line, Brian, we're assuming that Billy Kelleher has seat two, Michael McNamara has seat three, seats four and five are still in play, or does Cynthia Niveruku, is she out the gap for seat number four?
And possibly closing in on seat number three, Barry. I mean, that's what, having been talking to some Fianna Fáil people a little bit earlier on, they feel that she might close the gap on Mick Wallace as well. So
really just a battle for seat five at this stage.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've been having a debate here for the past hour with some of the journalists who are left here, and everybody has a sort of a different interpretation on it. And I only think back to 2019 here, when we thought Deirdre Clune hadn't a hope of taking the fifth seat, and she went home pretty distraught, came back in, and lo and behold, Deirdre Clune took the fifth seat because there was some extraordinary transfer patterns happened. So I don't think anybody could really call it here at this stage, except to say there's essentially five candidates in the battle for three seats.
No bother, Brian O'Connell, get some rest, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you tomorrow. From Cork, let's skip up to Castlebar now. The situation on the Midlands Northwest constituency. John Cook, any sign of an election there?
You must be joking, Barry. Count number eight saw the distribution of Irish People candidate Anthony Cahill's 6,124 votes. And we've got many of these smaller polling candidates to be eliminated yet before we get anywhere close to electing MEPs for the Midlands Northwest constituency here in Castlebar. Count number eight leaves the top 10 charts in the Midlands Northwest, looking similar to how it stood throughout the day. Luke Ming Flanagan, 80,484 votes. Nina Carberry of Fine Gael, 74,955 votes. Barry Cowan of Fianna Fáil, 74,488. Maria Walsh of Fine Gael, 71,174. The top four maintaining that tight pack throughout the day and numerous counts. Following behind them for that fifth seat, Kieran Mullooly, he's currently on 58,802 votes. Michelle Gildernew of Sinn Féin, 46,826 votes. Lisa Chambers, Fianna Fáil, 44,753. And further behind then, Pather Tobin, Aintu, 42,089, down to Niall Blaney of Fianna Fáil, 31,281, and Chris McManus, the outgoing Sinn Féin MEP, 30,212. Now, earlier when McManus, the outgoing MEP here and former Sligo councillor, attended the Count Centre in Castlebar with his party running mate in the Fermanagh South Tyrone MP, Michelle Gildernew, their disappointment was clear. Now, she said that while Sinn Féin was still in the mix, she wasn't overly optimistic that she could overtake Kieran Mullooly. She thought he'll probably scrape in with the last seat, in her words. After count number eight, Barry, he's 11,976 votes. ahead of her. And Gildernew said they were probably resigned to the fact that they were probably not going to win. But shortly afterwards, Sinn Féin's Piers Doherty marched into the room at the TF Royal Theatre in Castlebar, telling the media that his party is still in the hunt for the fifth seat. He spoke of a tight transfer pact between Gildernew and McManus, though he accepted it's an uphill battle. And this was not the election result he said that they wanted in this vast Midlands Northwest constituency.
So there you have it, Barry.
We're a long way to go. What's that, Barry?
Just going to say it's all still in play, John, in Midlands Northwest. I just must cut across to you there.
Well,
we have to go back.
Well, there you have it.
We have to go back to the RDS and Kay, with Kay Sheehy. And Kay, you have someone else there beside you, am I right in saying?
Yes, the successful Lynn Boylan of Sinn Féin is beside me.
Lynn Boylan, you're going back to Europe. How do you feel?
I'm absolutely delighted, to be honest, and just want to thank everybody who, you know, voted for me and trust me to be an MEP to represent the city I love, Dublin. And I'd like to thank all of the activists, everybody who, marched the pavements with me, and all the counters here in the RDS, because it's a pretty grim building and they've spent 4 days here.
And you took to knitting at one stage, did I see, to pass the time?
I did, yeah. I took up knitting as a New Year's resolution, and then I kind of said to myself, I might do it during the campaign and see can I finish it before the count, but I didn't succeed. I still have a bit to go.
And finally, Lynn, obviously things, not the weekend the party Sinn Féin might have hoped for. Did you feel under any more pressure to deliver this seat as those local counts come in and you looked in real contention for a seat in Europe?
Look, clearly we didn't win as many seats as we would have liked to have won, but we have increased the number of seats that we have in the councils. We have an MEP in Dublin now, which we didn't have before this election. So we will go away and, of course, analyse the strategy and analyse, you know, where we left seats behind, because there were a lot of incredible candidates that hit the bar. You know, I know James Stokes, I think there's another recount in Kildare.
Yes, a third recount.
Yes.
He might have to take up knitting as well.
He might have to. I'll show him how. So there's fantastic candidates, and the thing I'd say to them is, you know, I've been in their place with people who've lost seats or people who, you know, have come close. You dust yourself off, you go back and go at it again. But look, we've made some progress as the party, so, you know, we have increased our vote share, we have increased the number of councillors that we have. Hopefully we can take some more European Parliament seats as well.
No bother. Well, Lynn Boylan, newly elected Sinn Féin MEP for Dublin, thank you very much for joining us, and many, many congratulations for being re-elected once again. And I believe the aforementioned James Stokes out getting some coffee in Newbridge, so we might have some information from there a little later on. But let me introduce you to our panel tonight: James Lawless, Fianna Fáil TD for Kildare North and Chair of the Oireachtas Joint Committee on Justice; Rose Conway Walsh, Sinn Féin TD for Mayo and Party Spokesperson on Public Expenditure; Richard O'Donoghue, Independent TD for Limerick County and co-founder of Independent Ireland; Christina Finn, Political Editor with The Journal; and Dr. Kevin Cunningham, Managing Director of Ireland Thinks and Lecturer in Politics at the Technical University Dublin. To you first, Richard, obviously you'd an interest in this race in Dublin, this final result that we just have, and your candidate Niall Boylan just falling short. What's your reaction?
My reaction is, from Niall, what he has done within the 4 weeks that he has done it, and joining Independent Ireland to do it within the 4 weeks, shows with a small budget and a big heart you can put it up to all the big parties that have a big budget and a long history within their politic fields and have all the resources to do it. So what I'm saying here to people around the country is, you don't need a big budget. If you have a big heart and you're willing to go out and knock on the doors and represent people, you can make change. And Independent Ireland has shown that. We were in up to the last count, we were in it. And congratulations to all the candidates that have got through. It's a credit to anyone that puts their name on a poster.
And is it the last of Niall Boylan running for you in election?
I wouldn't think it's the last of Niall Boylan doing anything. So that we let Niall now dust himself off and relax after what has been an exciting 4 or 5 weeks. And we'll discuss that down there later.
Rose Conway Walsh, relieved Lynn Boylan there. What's your reaction?
Well, Eoghan O'Brien will have a new jumper for Christmas. I want to congratulate Lynn. I'm absolutely thrilled and delighted. And obviously Dahi as well, because Dahi had a part to play in that and everybody who voted for her. So we're really pleased to have that seat in Dublin. And I know she'll work really hard for those who voted for her and those who didn't. So it's a good news. It's a good news story.
How
for
important
us. I'm glad she made
is it in the context of the last few days to have that seat once again for Sinn Féin and to have that many people vote for the party in the European elections?
I think it's really important. I mean, as Lynn said, you know, these elections didn't fulfil our ambition, if you like, but we did increase the number of seats. So it is important. We're still holding out for the South, obviously, with Kathleen Funchen and Paul Gavin there, and then Michelle Gildernew and Chris and whatever Chris will transfer there as well. I was talking to Michelle there a while ago, and we're still hopeful. We
How
don't
strong
know
is that hope? Is it a visit to Knock Shrine, or is it a strong belief that a seat could be delivered?
Well, it may be, you know, we don't know. And I was mindful when we were at the count, because I was the count until nearly 3 o'clock last night in Castlebar when Indy Kenny went home. And I'm not sure what year it was. I was trying to think in Castlebar when I was at the count. He went home sure that he wasn't going to be elected. Somebody had to call him back, and he ended up being Taoiseach. So, I mean, I suppose that's the excitement of the count. But it is also the importance of the transfers right down the ballot paper.
James Lawless, Barry Andrews topped the poll. Is that significant for Fianna Fáil?
Look, I think it really is. I just want to congratulate Barry. First of all, just good to hear him there speaking at the opening of the programme. Barry is a really earnest, diligent, intelligent politician. And I think it's actually a triumph of substance over style to an extent that Barry is someone who's a really diligent legislator. I've been out in Brussels. I've seen him in action in the European Parliament, working very hard in committees. Someone who's doing the unglamorous technical work. And, you know, that's been rewarded. People see him as a really strong statesman-like figure. And he's topped the poll in Dublin. And forgive me if I take some joy or satisfaction in these results. We were being written off. I was reading an article 6 months ago that Fianna Fáil hadn't hope of a single MEP seat, never mind topping the poll in Dublin, bringing Billy Kelleher romping home in Ireland South, Barry Cowan a really strong performance in Midlands Northwest, and Lisa Chambers and Cynthia Murca was still in the hunt for what could be up to 5 seats for us in the European Parliament.
There'll be a sainthood for your General Secretary Sean Dorgan, I'm sure. I must return to the RDS and Kay Sheehy once again. Who have you got this time?
Now I've Eoin O'Riordan, the fourth candidate who was elected this evening.
Yes, Labour's Eoin O'Riordan, congratulations. You've got in. What's the reaction?
Oh, well, it's a kind of an out-of-body experience, really. For me and for us, we decided to have a very strong, positive campaign 6 months ago in the aftermath of the Dublin riots. We felt that we had something to say about where Dublin was going, and it resonated. We went with a slogan called For the Love of Dublin, and we worked hard. It resonated. I just want to thank everybody, obviously, who voted for what we believed in. I also want to pay tribute to Ciarán Cough in particular, who has lost out and is disappointed, and I've been that person myself, but he's such a person of substance. He brings so much to Irish politics, and I know he's going to be hurting, but it was his transfers that got us over the line, and that means a lot. And as Ivana has just said, and I absolutely agree with her, it's time for people on the centre-left, ourselves, the Social Democrats and the Greens, to realise what we can achieve together. I think the idea of being in competition with each other and trying to take each other out or take seats off each other, it doesn't wash anymore. I mean, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have decided to stop pretending that there's any difference between them, and then we need to start pretending that there's any difference between us.
So what are you
Greens
saying yourself? Is it an amalgamation, a formal electoral pact?
I think I'm trying to come from a place of generosity that, look, if you have a vision for this country of ours, if you want to be positive, if you want to stand up to the far right and challenge that negative, polarizing, divisive message that was on the ballot paper in this election in Dublin, that we were told was going to top the poll, that we can join forces and defeat this common enemy that wants to drag us back, and that we can potentially lead a government into the future. And I think if people feel that there's political capital to be gained in dividing people, in being poisonous, in being nasty, in blaming, and blaming immigrants, then you're going to lose. Yeah, I mean, you may have a small victory here or there, but fundamentally, Irish people are good, they're decent, and they will come together, if we have something worth voting for. And I felt that we had something worth voting for in our campaign. And I feel now we have a massive weight of responsibility to move forward and to justify this mandate that the people of Dublin have given us.
No bother. Eoin O'Riordan, Labour MEP now for Dublin. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, and get some rest. Congratulations to you. Christina Finn, what's your reaction to, first of all, what we heard there from Eoin O'Riordan, and how significant is that breakthrough for the Labour Party tonight?
Yeah, I definitely think there'll be some happy faces around the Labour Party this evening. And I just picking up on what Eoin was saying there about joining forces, you know, that with the Social Democrats, that would probably prick the ears of most, because it's something that has been said for a very long time in terms of Labour and the Social Democrats, and whether there is that much difference between them. And I think what Eoin is saying is here that, you know, if we're going into a general election, perhaps it does make sense if they have, you know, common platforms, common policies, that that conversation might be had. I'm not sure whether Ivana might not go that way and Holly Kearns, but I think they're perhaps discussing some sort of...
Well, even looking at their local election results, where one councillors, Labour won, Social Democrats didn't, and where the Social Democrats won, Labour didn't. So perhaps there is some merit in the point he is making,
yeah,
some might argue.
Exactly. I think I remember when Holly Kearns became leader of the Social Democrats, and one of the first questions I posed to her in that packed out room was, could she tell me the difference between the Social Democrats and Labour? And I was booed at that press conference somewhat jokingly by the members in it, but I think it was a legitimate question to be asked, and it's one that I think is still very much relevant right now when we see some of the results coming through. I think the Labour Party have been taking, you know, had a very difficult number of years since they were in government. They've had a hard slog, I think, in terms of winning back, you know, people's trust. Maybe they're not 100% there at the moment, but they'll definitely be taking the wins here, I think, this evening.
Kevin Cunningham, is that a significant win? And what does the polling suggest between those three parties that Eoin O'Riordan mentioned there as well?
Yeah, I think it's a very important point. I mean, if the Social Democrats and the Labour Party were ever to get together, structurally it'd be very difficult to figure out what that would actually look like. What would the party or organisation be called, for example? Would it be called the SDLP, like in Northern Ireland? Or what would it actually structurally, how would it actually operate? It is an interesting idea because, at least in the Netherlands, when GroenLinks and the PVDA, the kind of Green Party and the Labour Party in the Netherlands, joined together, they were viewed then as the most significant opposition to VVD at the time. And it was the very fact that they were a bigger party that attracted people into it. And now GroenLinks, PVDA is the, you know, they did very well in the European elections. They're very dominant. And I think that's probably the biggest attraction for the possible arrangement where the two parties get together. Because if Sinn Féin, now Sinn Féin may recover, but if Sinn Féin were viewed to be a much weaker political party, clearly a larger Social Democratic Labour Party would be viewed as a as another potential alternative to the status quo. And you could envisage a situation where people will start rallying behind that and their vote could actually potentially increase quite significantly.
At the moment, they have around 12% combined, wouldn't they? So could you see
and
that
in
growing?
Some cases across Dublin, their vote collectively, and if you include the Green Party as well, was significantly higher than that of Sinn Féin. So it is very much a significant possibility that this could actually move in a direction where those organisations, again, but that just depends on them being together, because whenever I've done discussions with voters and that sort of stuff about trying to understand why people support Sinn Féin, you know, people obviously say for change, but one of the reasons why they would view Sinn Féin as the catalyst for that change is merely because Sinn Féin is the largest alternative to the status quo of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael. If that sort of arrangement changes, as you saw in the, say, Dublin Bay South by-election, all those votes just came in behind Ivana Bacic because she was seen as the alternative to the status quo of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
James Lawless, Eoin O'Riordan's departure for Europe now precipitates a by-election. Will that by-election be held?
So first of all, I just want to also congratulate Eoin, and he was a valuable member of my Justice Committee. We'll have to fill that role in the morning, because that will committee will continue its work. But I wish him well, and indeed all the candidates that have now been elected in Dublin. In terms of the by-elections, there's a lot of talk about how the government would want to have the by-elections or not to have the by-elections and have a general election instead. But actually, if we look at the composition of the likely TDs being elected, three of the four of them if they make it, are going to be opposition TDs. So in actual fact, we'll have more stability for the government in the Dáil, not less, because the government will now enjoy...
Yes, but you have to hold a by-election within 6 months.
Well, under the Doherty ruling, under the High Court decision, in Dublin Bay North,
you already have one retiring TD in Sean Haughey, another in Richard Bruton, and another one now on the plane to Brussels or Strasbourg. So surely the merit of asking the electorate to go and vote in a by-election for Dublin Bay North, there's very little merit in it at all.
Yeah, well, certainly those people you mentioned, I presume, will be staying in put until the election, whenever it is. They won't be resigning, you know, and before that. But I suppose just making the point, in terms of the next 6 months, we know from the Doherty High Court ruling in 2010 that the Brit must be moved within 6 months of the vacancy being created. However, in that 6 months, the government's actually going to have a more peaceful time, not less stable, more stable, because we suddenly have gained a three-vote majority in the opposition just from these elections alone.
And what of your former Justice Committee colleagues' comments there, that there's very little between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil now? The electorate can't tell the difference at all.
Well, they told the difference in their droves when they elected both parties to jointly be the largest local government. I think the latest count, we're on 246, Fine Gael on 245.
Both of the parties' respective worst ever performances in the local elections.
It's all relative. Sometimes I find that the media are slower to the reality than the politicians are. And I have come of age politically in a time, my first election was 2009 and we were being ran from the doors. 2011 was my next election, not a good day for Fianna Fáil. Anything from that point on,
but you know, I think that from 2011, you've hardly increased your vote at all to 17.4% in 2011. It's a very, very minimal increase.
No, look, we're in around 23% just on Friday's elections. That's a 5% increase, a 6% increase on what was in 2011. But also, look at politics around the world. We're in a kind of balkanization, fragmentation age. The idea of two parties dominating in a seesaw, or two and a half parties it's had in Ireland for years, is gone probably forever. We now have at least seven sort of seriously organised parties, probably another five or six, maybe more micro-parties, just within the current Dáil. So the idea that you're ever going to have in any jurisdiction two big beasts slugging it out is not the way forward. But we have managed to transition to the new reality very successfully. We said a minute ago, we topped the poll in Dublin. We're getting an MEP in every single...
You also lost a lot of seats in Dublin as well.
Let's go back to basics. We are the largest party in local government for the third local election in a row. And again, let's go back to what we were being told. A few months ago on this show and shows like it, we were being told we'd be ran from the doors. We wouldn't, you know, we'd get a hiding.
Rose Conway, just to bring you in here for a moment. You've heard Éan O'Riordan there as well. Would that be a threat to Sinn Féin if there was an alliance of those three parties, that you've missed your chance perhaps to be top dog and now this new threat will come from the left?
I don't think so at all. I think, you know, in the way that you analysed, we saw the local elections in 2019 and then we saw what happened in 2020. Now, when James says about the period they're going to enjoy from now until there's a by-election, of course, it'll depend, you know, most Wednesday nights you'll have a number of independents who vote with the government. So I suppose that, you know, that's not going to be an issue anyway. I would expect that the independents will continue on to do that. But as a party, we will continue on to hold the government to account every Wednesday night and every occasion that we can in terms of housing and health and the many other issues.
Other parties in the opposition now could end up eating your lunch after not increasing your vote from the 2019 or not substantially increasing your vote from the 2019 local election.
Well, we still increased it, but I think, we're focused on our own game. What other parties do is their own business. There'll be a clear choice for people in the next election, and that will be either to vote for more of the same that they've had for the last 13 years with Fine Gael and then a combination of Fianna Fáil or something different. And what people are saying to us in the doors for the local election, and we wanted, and I'll be very honest with you here, we wanted there to be change at local government level. And I can speak for myself in Mayo. I had a vision of how that would change in terms of all of the decades that we've had with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
Even in your own area, there was a lack of a seat in Belmunnet.
That's right. That's a three-seater. We lost the seat the last one. And I think a big factor in it is the incumbency. I know from being in local government myself, it's very difficult to unseat somebody who's there for two reasons. Firstly, because people will know the councillor a lot better. But secondly, if you look over the term of the 5 years, each councillor would have up to €1 million to spend.
One man who did unseat some incumbents balance as Richard O'Donoghue and Independent Ireland. But you'd be lumped in a lot of the media coverage with the independents, independent TDs themselves. Do you believe the party, you've set yourselves apart from those independents?
100%. And if you look at it from, and I've listened to all the speakers who are speaking and they're talking about Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin. You look at the mayoral election in Limerick, where the two main contenders for the mayoral election were independents. Sinn Féin fell very short. Maurice Quinlivan took a massive vote in the last general election and his vote was halved in a mayoral election which involved city and county. So Sinn Féin dropped and plummeted fast. But independents were the two main runners for the mayoral
election. Fianna Fáil in a very solid third place. A brand new candidate.
Fianna Fáil had a candidate that was Labour first, then Fine Gael, then Fianna Fáil.
She ran as a Fianna Fáil candidate. She came third after your independence.
But what we're saying here,
in our own areas,
and if you're looking in one constituency, Dara Keel, we elected two independent, which was unheard of, independent Ireland candidates. With a short campaign, we ran seven people in Limerick, and three of them ran it up to the last with a 4 or 5 week campaign, and. Which is absolutely huge for somebody that actually only started up something.
But did you get a boost because most of the electorate thought you were independent TDs? I think there's the tale of Ciara Mullooly canvassing, saying, I will be an independent voice, I'm an independent. And the reporter, Louise Byrne, I think it was, pointed out, well, in actual fact, Ciaran, you're part of a group, you're not independent at all.
So what we've always went out with Independent Ireland, we've always stayed with Independent Ireland. But what Independent Ireland allows for is it allows you to be an independent within a party, within a structure. And the structure there is that you have to look after your area, you look after your people. And then if it comes to an area where, like the referendums, where the country voted 70% against the government and all the oppositions, where they listened to the likes of Independent and ANTU, and they got 70% of the people to say no, that means that a lot of people are actually listening outside.
Will you rethink the name,
party.
Independent Ireland? Is it not a bit of false advertising?
No.
When capitalising on independent TDs?
It's very hard to take it.
Independent Ireland is an independent party which allows for independents to stay independent and gives them a structure.
But a lot of them are actually ex-parties of other parties. The guy who was elected for Independent Ireland in Ace is an ex-Labour councillor, so it's a bit rich for Richard to come on and start preaching about people with different backgrounds.
He left his party.
I know him well, I know him for 20 years. He left when independent. And then he came back in and now he didn't get elected and he got the Independent Ireland.
Out of the 23 candidates that got elected for under Independent Ireland, they were not a member of no party. So the majority.
Are you saying you don't want members of other parties coming to your banner?
If those people, lost the faith in their own parties and they want to do better for Ireland and be an independent voice for Ireland, Independent Ireland is there to welcome.
Kevin Cunningham,
we can squabble over the word independent for the rest of the night. But how much of this is about mobilising a particular demographic when it comes to getting people out to vote? We know housing a key issue, health. People are most affected by one of those topics. Didn't vote either. Because they didn't see themselves being represented in terms of their political views or knew that housing could only be improved at a national government level, that there was little that a councillor could actually do. So how much of this is about mobilising a particular demographic? I think you've some insight into that from your exit poll, don't you?
Yeah, actually, it's a very interesting question. I'm not sure which you're maybe referring to, but I do have some interesting information in relation to at least some polling I was doing during the week. So I did some telephone polling, some random digital. I know Fianna Fáil don't like the internet polling these days, but I also do some telephone polling as well. And during the week of the elections, so from the 5th to the 8th, a sample size of over 1,000. And on that, the composition of the vote was basically as you would normally have it, 21% for Sinn Féin, 18%, 19% for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, which is basically what it is when you ask people about the brand of the party they're interested in. But what was interesting about this is that was a nationally representative sample. It starts to look a little bit more like what happened in the local elections. If you basically remove almost all the people who are working class and almost all the people who are younger from the composition of the vote, it starts to look much, much more like what happened last week. I think that's part of it. I think a lot of it is actually voters deciding if they're a Sinn Féin voter on the one hand, also picking a Fianna Fáil candidate in many cases, or an independent voter picking a Fianna Fáil candidate, because they do tend to be much better at mobilising their voters in Fianna Fáil in particular, I guess.
So do you think a higher turnout amongst those demographics that you mentioned would have led to a materially different result?
That would invariably, and that is a common pattern in Europe. I mean, that is the whole principle behind the second order election model as well. It's the idea that certain people are more likely to vote in local elections and even by-elections.
It's an interesting concept that Kevin has touched on there, the idea that people might, in the abstract sense, reply to a pollster saying they're going to vote a particular way when the next election is called in some, you know, down the line. But when it actually comes, when the rubber hits the road and there's a ballot paper in front of them and they're looking at the candidates for their area, be that a local or a general election, I'd say, then they actually go by the ones that they know, the ones that they've built a rapport with, the ones that they've established.
So this is an important point, but like, so for local elections, it's obviously very, very important. So in that exit poll, we asked people, why did they actually vote the way they did? Overwhelmingly, people said candidate. Most, the vast majority of that was about hardworking candidates. So you can understand why there's this stability.
And in fact, you found, I think, as well, that Fianna Fáil voters had the biggest attachment to the candidate.
Obviously, hardest-working candidates. Obviously, had the hardest working candidates. If we take that thesis to its conclusion, we did the best because we're the hardest working candidates.
But that might be trouble for them party wise,
I absolutely agree. That's absolutely the case. Fianna Fáil have been very effective. Actually, if you look back, so we talk about how Fianna Fáil's vote share has developed over time. Fianna Fáil got, I think I'm right in saying, 27% in the 2014 local elections, which actually was much more staggering, much more interesting, because that was 5 points ahead of the national polling at that point in time. Mm. And that was again because what I think seemed to happen, organisationally, probably Sean Dorgan, probably could be credited for this.
That's his second mention now, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a saint to it already now. He's got something else. I mean, but anyway, so they obviously were very effective at recruiting people like, lots of individual candidates who are very effective at getting their getting voters out and that sort of stuff. So they have this whole vote, which is more personal than attached to a particular party. You know, when you ask people whether the candidate that they voted for, if that candidate was a member of a different party, whether they would vote for them, a very large number of people who vote Fianna Fáil actually would vote for them.
So simplistically, it's person over policy, perhaps.
But that also means that the Fianna Fáil vote is actually lower than the 23%. If the candidates, by definition, are lifting the party up, that means the party's brand has to be, by definition, lower than that, which is where the polling is.
We have one outstanding recount in the local elections. Of course, that this is in Newbridge, where two candidates, Aidan Tuas, Melissa Byrne, and Sinn Féin's Jamie Stokes, are locked level, heading for a third recount now. Image from them in Punchestown Racecourse at the Cannes Centre showing them embrace. But Rose Conway Walsh, I believe one of your own candidates in Sinn Féin, this being John Sheehan and Swinford, he was at the wrong side of a double recount by one vote. And there was something within that was of particular concern to you, wasn't there?
Well, he was indeed, and I want to congratulate John, obviously, and Gerry Murray there. We were trying to take the two seats out of four and he missed out on one. But what it was there was a number of ballot papers with number one for John on that weren't stamped. And I do think overall...
What's not stamped in layman's terms?
So when you go in to get your ballot paper, it is stamped by the person who hands you the ballot papers. But often I know, I've never looked to see if there's a stamp on the paper. But I think people need to be reminded that in order for their vote to be valid, that stamp needs to be there. Or the Electoral Commission needs to have a look to see to see how we can overcome that. I think it would be very important as well to do like a data analysis of how many votes in this election, if it was possible to do that, to get a measure of it, of how many across the board hadn't been stamped and what impact that has on the results.
The Department Press Office, they had a breakdown of invalid votes from the 2019 local elections, 34,618 invalid votes in total. Of these, 1,345 were discounted due to want of an official mark. Mm. The department says that returning officers are responsible for ensuring that the polling staff carry out their duties in a satisfactory manner. Christina Finn, that's a very high figure, isn't it? That's obviously for these elections 5 years ago.
Yeah, I was speaking to a number of tally people in the RDS who were highlighting this very issue about the number of invalid votes that they were coming across. A lot of people with, you know, the X's are going between the two papers, 1, 2, 3, and then moving on to the other ballot paper for 4, 5, 6. And like a number of us were talking down in the count centre just about being in school and recalling how we were actually taught how to fill out in a CSP class, how to fill out a ballot paper. And one of the tally people was saying there does need to be like a ramping up of an information programme or campaign about how to actually do that, be it a television, radio. But the number of invalid ballots that they were seeing across the board was staggering to them.
The lack of a stamp, Richard O'Donoghue.
Yeah, we've seen it across, and we saw where we were doing tallies at most of the stations ourselves, and we were joined up with other parties doing tallies. We had someone that had a tally done, and when they got their actual result, they were 81 votes short of their own tally, and these were down to invalid stamping on the papers, and they actually lost their seat afterwards by 50 votes. So when you have it, now it was the same for a lot of different candidates, but it was down to the basic stamp. So what we have to see here is for people coming from different tally areas that There is a precedent in this across the, it seems to be across the whole country, that they weren't being stamped properly in certain cases. There has to be a way of bringing them back to the polling booths as well to find out where the problem lies and how do we correct it. Mm. Make sure in every election that any vote that a person gets, that the minimum they need to get, it needs to be stamped and stamped properly. If somebody X is wrong or does something, that's a different story. But the initial thing, every vote should be stamped properly.
James Lawless, is there anything that can be done that's for a vote, a paper not to be stamped? It really would be rather frustrating to lose a seat on that.
That's absolutely outrageous and a breach of democracy and a breach of constitutional rights of the people who lost their vote as a result. I think serious questions have to be asked about whatever polling stations that occurred in.
But you have the data from 2019, it was high, and it would appear nothing has been done about it.
I think the high figure you mentioned there, if I understood you correctly, related to spoiled ballots as well as to...
The initial high figure was for spoiled ballots. So 34,000 spoiled ballots, and of the 34,000 spoiled, 1,345 were discounted because they didn't have the stamp.
Just doing the simple maths on that, that would mean that on average you might expect 10 to 20 or at most per LEA. By the sounds of the numbers here, it sounds like it's way bigger in this.
Yeah,
election.
I think this is to be an anomaly. Just picking up
many
point,
multiples
though,
higher, I guess.
I think just picking up a point Christine made about the... I suppose the kind of civics and filling in PRSTV ballot paper in school and in civics classes. When I went to school in the CBS, we had civics classes and we taught, you know, Greek and Roman civilization, all kinds of weird and wonderful things in them. I think they were very valuable. But one of the things I think that would be helpful to the system if there's a great understanding of it is the difference between councillors, TDs, MEPs, you know, because I think there's a great confusion amongst what we all do and what we're all supposed to do. And a friend of mine who is now retired from politics but ran in many general and local elections said he used to get hounded in general elections over local issues, and then he got blamed in local elections over national issues. And I think if there was, you know, we should really, as a TD, I should be judged for how I chaired the Justice Committee, how I passed legislation.
Yes, well, I better cut across you all because we do have some breaking developments in Castlebar. John Cook, what news do you bring?
Don't get too excited, Barry. We did have count number 9, and that has brought us news of another elimination, and this time it's the elimination of the Labour Party candidate, Fergal Landy. He's originally from County Clare. He's living in County Galway, and he's the Chief Executive Officer of Family Resource Centres nationally. He ran for the Labour Party here, as eliminated now on 7,350 votes, and those votes now will become our count 10 as we go late into the night here in Castlebar. the lay of the land still much the same, with Flanagan, Carberry, Cowan and Walsh ahead, then Mullooly and Gildernew, about 12,000 votes between them, followed by Chambers, Tobin, Blaney and McManus, as I mentioned to you earlier on. And you were wondering when we might have those transfers, when we would see how those Sinn Féin or Fianna Fáil votes would transfer. Well, just to let you know, Barry, we are expecting to do a late one tonight, more counts to come. Talk of a Wednesday result in Castlebar quickly became Thursday and has now more recently been replaced by the F word. And I'm loath to say it to your delicate ears, Barry, but the late debate is after the watershed, I think. So I'm going to say it quietly. Friday.
Well, John, I did see some boisterous scenes at the local election counts at the TF in Castlebar. Blackie Gavin thrown into the air at 5:30 and a tense room for the Swinford recount. So I think there'll be plenty of entertainment there for you.
Don't be telling tales, Barry.
I'm sure what happens
in Castlebar stays in Castlebar.
No bother. Well, John, enjoy yourself and keep yourself hydrated. We'll be back in a moment.
Email latedebate@rte.ie.
Welcome back. We're skipping over to Brussels now. I'm joined on the line by Sarah Collins, who's the Europe correspondent for the Business Post. And Sarah, you've been crunching numbers on how close Ursula von der Leyen is to retaining her presidency of the European Commission. What's the picture?
I've been trying to crunch the numbers as her party is as well. You know, we heard a lot on Sunday night that the centre is holding, that her centre-right EPP, the European People's Party, has retained the majority in the parliament, which they have. The difference is that there have been a few gains on the right of the European Parliament, and it depends what they do and how they vote. So she has, in theory, she has the support of the centre-left, Socialist and Democrats, and the Renew Party, which is the French, led by the French delegation of Emmanuel Macron. The problem is he has gotten a drubbing. It's not even sure if their political group leader will continue to be the group leader in the European Parliament. So she's cutting it very fine. There's a few steps that need to happen first. She needs to get the approval of EU leaders. Then she needs to get the Parliament's votes. And it's on a knife edge. The last time in 2019, when she was a surprise candidate, she only won by 9. So she really needs to make sure that she has more MEPs than she thinks she needs on her side.
And when will it all become clear, or what are the key staging posts from here?
So every day there is something new. All the different political groupings in Brussels are kind of furiously meeting and deciding who they'll vote for. I mentioned Emmanuel Macron's results. You know, he called a snap election in France because of the absolute hammering that his pro-Europe coalition got in the European elections. They've essentially lost more than half of their MEPs. They were the most powerful delegation in this kind of liberal grouping, and they would have been assuredly von der Leyen supporters. Because they're not as powerful anymore, she might need to get the right on side. And that means Giorgia Meloni, the Italian firebrand kind of populist prime minister. She is a von der Leyen ally. But there's only so far you can go in the European Parliament. It's not like national parliaments. You can't whip in the same way. So even if you have, you know, the European People's Party grouping of von der Leyen, she can't instruct all her MEPs to vote that way because you have several countries within that. Even all the Irish MEPs, it's not sure that they would vote the same way. So she has to get probably a margin of like 60 to 70 extra MEPs than she thinks she needs. So that's where the numbers are going. It's looking in her favour because there really isn't an alternate candidate at this stage.
Okay, so she might get over the line quite yet.
She might, and time will tell. Like, we'll know more at the end of June. The French elections happen the very end of June. There's also an EU leaders summit then when they'll officially nominate von der Leyen, pending any, you know, surprise wildcard candidates. Then we'll see in July.
So that summit at the end of June, crucial. Okay, Sarah Collins in Brussels, thank you very much for joining us this evening. James Lawless, what's your reaction to that? And how might Fianna Fáil play into it in Europe?
Yeah, well, look, I think it's interesting, and I actually welcome that European politics is, I suppose, been taken more seriously in Ireland, and it's seen we're part of Europe, so it's only right that we should be in the middle of these debates. I was looking at a map. I think Ursula von der Leyen's own approach is motivated sometimes more by German politics than by European politics. I think her response to Israel and the Hamas attack was part of that. The historical German guilt as to the Holocaust, etc. But I was looking at a map of Germany today, and you have almost a parallel to the old East-West Germany, where you have the CDU, the Christian right, taking almost all the seats in what was West Germany.
So you think she'll get over the line, do you?
Well, I just think that we have quite actually a right. So we have a Christian right and a far right in the old West and the old East Germany, respectively. That might be motivating her openness to deal with people
like Malone. Christine, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I think it's going to be notable when we're talking about the Fianna Fáil MEPs. They've all sort of pledged that they wouldn't be in support of Ursula von der Leyen becoming.
Aon Reardon, obviously, as well.
As well, Aon Reardon. And the cabinet obviously met today. I understand that it wasn't discussed. We did ask whether Ursula von der Leyen's bid to be EU Commission President was discussed. It has not. And apparently there will be discussions among the three party leaders, Eamon Ryan, Simon Harris and Micheál Martin, about whether they
will formulate a decision on that.
They haven't had those discussions yet, but when we did ask a Green Party government spokesperson about Eamon Ryan's position, they were saying that they were kind of waiting to see, I think, what way she might play in with some of those the right side if she needs to gather those numbers, and that could be an issue on the Green Party side. So we could be looking at a bit of an issue here in terms of whether the EU leader's head of state in terms of Simon Harris, whether he comes under pressure from, be it Micheál Martin from the side of his own party or from the Green Party.
An internal issue on this perhaps. Rose Conway-Walsh, what side will Lynn Boylan join when she travels to Brussels and Strasbourg?
Well, there's no question about that. We certainly, Sinn Féin, won't be voting for Ursula von der Leyen.
But what grouping will Sinn Féin be part of on this occasion?
We don't know yet. We will be discussing that. We'll see what the results of the election are first.
And Richard O'Donoghue, if Ciarán Mullooly is successful, where will he sit?
Again, that's up for discussion yet. And again, he hasn't been elected yet. But I wouldn't see him going on the side of Ursula von der Leyen.
But what are the options on the menu for you?
Well, we've had a couple of different discussions with different people and from different areas, and people came up with all different ideas, but we'll wait until we have a couple of people coming to us. So it's a
buffet selection, is it?
We'll wait until he gets elected first, which I believe he will, and then we will sit down as a party, Independent Ireland, and discuss it.
So
just like they do at home, and they jump into another
healthy carvery for him to go through before picking
any good person would always sit down and discuss something as a party before they would make any decision. I'll go with that.
Spoken like a true independent.
Kevin Cunningham, on some what we have seen in these European elections heretofore is the transfers. They seem to be scattering like confetti. Any read on that or why that is happening?
I think that's partly because of the size of the ballot. I feel like towards the end of the counts, you'll find someone whose preference might be third for one of those candidates. And eventually, after that point, it's a little bit more random in terms of how people feel about things. You know, even in an opinion poll, it's interesting. It's hard, difficult enough to get people's genuine first preference. Their second preference, a bit iffy. Third, fourth, and so on, obviously, is a little bit more random. And what we're dealing with in latter parts of these counts, where obviously there's 23 and plus candidates you're talking about, you know, someone who's selected that candidate as fifth and, you know, where, I don't know what direction the sixth or seventh is going
to
go.
But was the transfer between Dahi Doolan to Lynn Boylan a surprise then, because it was perhaps stronger than expected? Should we expect to see something like that again in these next two marathon counts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that cohesion, at least within Sinn Féin, has always been something that's been quite prominent. I think there's, I mean, you obviously saw in the transfer from Ciarán Cough to Aon Reardon being extremely strong. That's also not surprising either. There's some things I think you can predict. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael basically effectively one party.
Sean Kelly giving more to Fianna Fáil and then Niall Boylan picking up quite a few, I think, for Breed Smith, wasn't it?
I mean, even if you go back to 2011 when the parties had never actually been in government at all, the rate in which transfers were transferring between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael was already enormous. Now, and then when parties get into government, you could see Fine Gael and Labour having much stronger patterns. Now, effectively, you know, there isn't an ideological difference or even a governmental difference between Fianna Fáil.
So much politics to discuss, but Christina Finn, it would be remiss of us not to mention history today, a new directly elected mayor for Limerick.
Yeah, John Moran being elected there down in Limerick. So let's not forget there are other important matters happening down there. An interesting character in terms of himself coming, you know, from a banking background, from a law firm, obviously heading up the Department of Finance during some of those austerity years with Michael Noonan's right-hand man. But look, I think it's going to be a really interesting role for him to fill. So, you know, it's basically going to have a lot more power, similar to what a chief executive might have in a council. Comes with a nice salary of over €154,000, so you're not doing too badly there.
A lot in his in-tray. Yeah. Richard O'Donoghue is nodding congratulations, but I have to take a break.
Email latedebate@rte.ie.
Shin shin, that's our lot. We're still parsing through the fallout from the weekend here. In a word, that recount is ongoing in Newbridge and Kildare to fill the final three seats nationwide. James Stokes, Sinn Féin and Melissa Byrne aim to locked level, and the others still in that race, the independent Tom McDonnell, Noel Heavey of Fianna Fáil and Rob Power of Fianna Fáil as well, whom expect to be elected. That's all we have time for this evening. Sean Marram, our broadcast coordinator, research by Fiona Donlan, James Feeney on sound, and tonight's programme was produced by our series producer Penny Hart. Up next here on RTE Radio 1, it's Ihawa to Aoife Scott and Late Date.